Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Monica Gross, who is an Alexander Technique teacher. She teaches in Asheville and Charlotte, North Carolina, and some in South Carolina and other locations. And more importantly, perhaps for this podcast, she's the executive director of the Poise Project, which is a nonprofit launched in 2016 to bring Alexander Technique principles to new populations and to increase accessibility across broad socioeconomic groups. And we're going to talk today about that project, what it's all about in more detail, what it's done so far, and what its next project is. Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert.
Could you give our listeners a short description of the Alexander Technique before we get into the Poise Project?
Yes, and this is something that with the Poise Project interacting with the public, it's important to have some specifics. So what I often say is that Alexander Technique utilizes an educational methodology. It's a highly strategic approach that uses a clear set of learned principles to teach any individual the skills for conscious control and self-regulation. Mm-hmm. It has long-term retention, so it's not something you have to set time aside to practice, but rather once you have a basic understanding of the AT principles, you can begin applying them right away and gradually becoming more and more adept and sophisticated in their application. Mm-hmm. And specifically, you learn how to choose where to place your attention inside yourself to improve your potential to create the most favorable conditions for your optimal functioning, something we could call an overall poise. Mm-hmm. Most profoundly, though, AT is based on a belief that through learning these basic principles of human functioning and with a self-awareness that follows, human beings can learn, develop, and improve throughout all ages, all challenges of life, and that they can remain generative and active partners in their own growth throughout the entire arc of their lives.
Okay, and maybe we should add that the Alexander Technique has been around for quite a long time, about 120-ish years now, and has been doing exactly those things that you just mentioned.
Yes, so. Mm-hmm. And I think that F.M. Alexander, the man who started the Alexander Technique and defined these principles many years ago, specifically around the turn of the 20th century, the early 1900s, that his at the end of his life, in the 1955, that he defined the process of Alexander Technique moving forward through the 20th century, and now we're in the 21st century, as the skills one needs to have to live well in relationship in a democratic society.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also, you might say, how to live well on the surface of the earth.
And I think in democratic societies, we have those concerns for the well-being of the whole.
Right.
And we have the concerns for the well-being of the whole of the individual,
right?
Our personal self, our first-person mm-hmm. well-being and, mm-hmm. and wholeness. But we also want to have a sense of the well-being of other wholes,
right.
such as mm-hmm. family, society, mm-hmm. and obviously the earth or the universe moving outward into larger and larger whole integrities.
Right. So say a little bit about the origins of the Poise Project and its the first specific project that it took on last year.
Yes. I've been teaching Alexander Technique for a little over 30 years, and I had my first lesson many years ago when I was 19, and it had such a powerful and profound effect for me. I felt it really helped me manage myself in terms of my metabolism, my ups and downs, and I was very gung-ho. But now, after all of these years, I still find that many, many people don't know what it is. So I always tell the story that I'm hoping that on my deathbed as I'm lying there, I don't want this sort of scenario where I'm hearing a couple of people whispering above me and saying, well, what did she do? And the other person says, she was an Alexander teacher. And the other person says, Alexander Technique, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, and then I'm gone. And those are the last words I heard. So I was determined at a certain age that that was not going to be my exit. And so I said, what can I do? And I began researching why this is the case and why Alexander teachers aren't better recognized and utilized, why they aren't in institutions, why they aren't in staff positions at hospitals, why they aren't in staff positions at universities in departments other than the performing arts. And over about a 6-7 year period of gathering research, having workshops, I came up with a strategic approach, which I tested at the Alexander Technique Congress in Limerick in August 2015 and wrote a Congress paper, which is a 12-step program for 21st century job creation for Alexander Technique teachers and graduating trainees. So that was published in the Congress papers, and it's downloadable from our website. Mm-hmm. And that's the strategic model for the POISE project. Mm-hmm. So the main mission, our mission, is, as we have defined it, is to maintain natural poise and personal growth throughout all stages and challenges of life through the principles of Alexander Technique. Our mission is realized through promotion of the profession, creation of programs adapted for specific populations and industries, and support of cutting-edge research in the field. We use a coordinated team approach that unites individuals who have benefited from AT, industry expert advocates, and AT professionals.
Mm-hmm. So Alexander teachers, students of the Alexander Technique, and people in various other professions.
Right, in various connecting professions. So in the 12-step program, one of the first things we need to do, of course, is identify who we want to help. That comes before even beginning. So you decide, who do you want to help? Mm-hmm. And if that population, for instance, our first population was to work with people with Parkinson's, to bring Alexander mm-hmm. Technique to people with Parkinson's and their care partners, mm-hmm. we chose that population to be our first initiative because that was a population where there had been some research done, mm-hmm. a good clinical study that was done by Chloe Stalabras in the UK, mm-hmm. and we wanted to build on that. So the first thing we did was to try to find out, well, what industries would connect us to that target population? And places like Parkinson's associations, nonprofits, movement disorder specialists, physical therapists, different individuals and institutions that would be connecting us. Mm-hmm. And then we located Alexander teachers who had some level of expertise in that field. And we began working and talking with them and learning from them. And then we, the next step is very important. It's locating what I call an advocate translator, which is basically a way of saying someone from within the field and within that population. It could be a person with Parkinson's. It could be a movement disorder specialist who also has had some experience of Alexander, who's benefited from it. Mm-hmm. And they can help us, in a sense, translate our jargon or our language or our way of working or a way of seeing to reflect back what that the needs or the perceived needs are of that population. And because if you want to work with a specific population, you really need to convince decision makers and gatekeepers who are going to be able to connect you to that population. We do need to learn ways of speaking and presenting ourselves to those decision makers that are going to be successful. Mm-hmm. So then we try to find someone who is within the industry or the population who hasn't had any knowledge of Alexander and sort of test things with them and get feedback from them. Did they understand? Does this make sense? Would this be useful? And then we start to put together an understanding of, well, how are these people, how is this population solving their problems? How are they meeting their needs? Or how does the industry try to meet their needs? Mm-hmm. And so in the case of people with Parkinson's, obviously there's medical research, there's medication they're taking, there's physical therapy programs, there's occupational therapy, speech language pathology for speech issues, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So then we start to say, well, what is it that Alexander offers this population that these other aspects, these other professionals don't, or that we could enhance? So then we came up with the very clear way of articulating the difference of what makes an Alexander Technique teacher a uniquely qualified member of this care team, let's say for people with Parkinson's. And what we said was that the Alexander teacher, let's say you receive a diagnosis of Parkinson's, Robert, it's a very daunting, very a profound diagnosis, and there's often a lot of despair or discouragement around it. You're told that you can take your medication, that there's no cure yet, that there is progression, and so forth.
Right.
You're told exercise is beneficial. You're told socialization is beneficial, and various recommendations. But what the Alexander teacher can do, let's say you've had that diagnosis, if you're then given a referral to an Alexander specialist, such as myself, that's how they would refer to someone, an Alexander specialist, then I would give you the skills to become an active partner on your own care team. So that you are actively doing what you can to create the best possible conditions for your own well-being and for receiving the benefits of an exercise program, of receiving the benefits of your PT or your occupational therapist, and of interacting with the people in your family, your care partners, your spouse, and so forth. And the other aspect of Alexander that's very unique, which I which I mentioned in the opening definition, is that it has long-term retention. So you don't have to set aside time every couple times a week to do your rock steady boxing program. You have your Alexander during what they call IADLs, which are instrumental activities of daily living. Or ADLs, activities of daily living. These are definitions of capability of remaining in the community. So the longer someone can manage their instrumental activities of daily living, the more likely they'll be able to remain in the community and active. So we don't know how beneficial in the long term Alexander training would be for someone with Parkinson's at the beginning of their diagnosis and whether it could have a favorable effect on slowing down progression. And that's something that the POISE project is committed to, which is long-term or longitudinal research around questions like that with each population that we work with. So with each program that we develop, we're also doing research at the same time.
Right.
We try to gather data.
So you want to build on the studies, particularly the one that's the one, I think she's done several, hasn't she, Chloe?
She did a preliminary study, which laid out, I think it was with 24 participants, and then they did follow-up. I believe it was at 6 months and a year, possibly 18 months, and that's where it became indicated, because with research you don't say it proves, you say it indicates, it shows, it seems that it has the potential for long-term retention. So those three things that the Alexander teacher delivers skills that make the person better able to benefit from everything else that they are engaged in and that they're self-regulating. Secondly, of course, that it might have an impact on their long-term experience with any diagnosis if we're working with a pathological population. And then this idea that you don't have to set time aside for it. It's something you learn and you apply actively in daily activity. And even if you can't exercise, even if you're wheelchair bound, especially then, these skills are going to become very important so that you don't lose functioning.
Yes, exactly.
And that your systems, your respiratory, your circulatory, your digestion, all of these systems continue to work as optimally as they possibly can, given the conditions that are out of one's control.
Right. And maybe a very brief pause here to just, I'd like to just comment on the language terminology that you're using, which is the kind of terminology that you're going, that anyone who's going to have to interact with, in this case, medical profession and
So you noticed that. I was deliberately doing that.
Professions that are medically related, perhaps even. So, for example, the term self-regulation, which is not something that most Alexander teachers would use normally. They probably would talk in terms of learning how to look after yourself or something like that.
And you and I know that when we're right. working with a client, that's the language we'll be using.
Right.
Just what you said. I'm not going to say to someone, oh, yes, you're here to learn self-regulation, right?
Right. But if you're interacting with that
right.
world.
If we want someone to hire us so right. that we can work with that person, so that we can use the more personal colloquial language, mm-hmm. then we need to be able to appear credible, to be credible.
Yeah.
And to be able to interact and be an intermediary and an advocate for that person that we want to bring Alexander principles to for their benefit. It's our responsibility to advocate for them, and then there'll be bottom-up advocacy from people. It's already happening, people with Parkinson's who've benefited from AT, and that's bottom-up advocacy. They're going to their allied health professionals and their communities and saying, we want these programs.
Right.
So that's how it changes. So just to finish going through that, and it's very brief now, mm-hmm. once you get together, you get this language, you get your clarity about what you're offering, that the other solutions that they're looking at, that they're using, perhaps don't offer, then you're able to speak to the decision makers. And you test it first with a forward-thinking industry expert, someone who's progressively minded, who's looking, who's positively excited about new approaches. Mm-hmm. And again, you test this with them and you get feedback from them. And you also say, well, who should I go to with this program? And more importantly, who should I not go to?
Mm-hmm.
Who should I avoid if I'm asking for money or if I'm asking for a position or a pilot study? Mm-hmm. You get their advice, you listen to it, you incorporate it, and then you go finally to those gatekeepers, the people who basically are bottom line. They just want to know, is it going to work? How long will it take? How much will it cost? And you can give them honest answers because you have evidence to present.
Right.
And then, of course, it's a whole thing of where's the funding going to come? How is it going to be delivered? And so we've been looking very, very, very directly at economic systems, economic models. And the only economic model Alexander Technique has used is private practice, private pay, entrepreneurship.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. Occasionally, there are people who have started a bit of a franchise, such as Stephen Shaw with the Shaw Method for Swimming. A little bit perhaps with Malcolm Balk with the running, with a variety of programs like that. But again, that's a for-profit model. Mm-hmm. We have not utilized our nonprofit structures. Mm-hmm. The membership organizations utilize nonprofit structures, but it's within the framework of benefits to membership.
Right.
So to have a nonprofit which is a public service organization, which is what the POISE Project is, to have that, the nonprofit structure is partnering so that you can find funding sources both from private philanthropy, from individual donors, from funding organizations, from even NGOs, non-governmental organizations, mm-hmm. if we want to work in developing countries mm-hmm. or with refugees and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So the opportunities in this decade, I think, are so massive.
Right.
There is nothing but opportunities. The world has shifted. And there really is an interest in self-development, in personal growth, the mindfulness movement, the developments in neuroscience, which are giving some credibility from that more scientific or medical side,
mm-hmm.
and a public that is ready to say, yes, in my daughter's public school, yeah, they do meditation. They do a little mindfulness. They do a little yoga.
Right.
So it's really a key time, and we need to be ready. And if the things that we're going to need to do that will be, we have to work across a variety of agendas simultaneously to be successful. We need to create and deliver these AT principle-based classes for these target populations,
mm-hmm.
simply so that we can begin to show the efficacy of it, that it works.
Right.
Secondly, we need to create and deliver these AT principle-based continuing ed courses for people who are not Alexander teachers so they understand what it is that we're teaching and how they can support the people who come to them to cue this, to understand what the individual is working with when they're working with AT principles. Mm-hmm. They, these industry professionals, don't necessarily have to take Alexander lessons themselves, but they need to have an understanding of how it works, what we're teaching, and why. And we also need to, as I was discussing, identify funding sources and delivery systems. That's the terms that are often used in nonprofits and in government, city, local, state, federal government programs, delivery systems that provide alternatives to this private practice, private pay model, so that we can begin to see socioeconomically diverse populations receiving Alexander, because there are tremendous barriers if it's only private practice, private pay. It becomes a very elite practice. To reverse that, we're not getting teachers from socioeconomically diverse communities. Because if you want a community to engage with the Alexander skills, then they want to see people from their community that are bringing it to them. One of our initiatives, one of our future initiatives, is to work with prisoners. And wouldn't that be a very good study for someone who's in prison to maybe leave prison as an Alexander Technique teacher? And to work within the prison system, or to work in intervention programs at-risk populations. That's a wonderful, but nobody is going to become an Alexander teacher if there isn't a good job at the end of it. And that's the next thing. We're trying to create jobs for AT professionals, and we're trying to create internships and sort of entry-level job opportunities for graduating trainees. A lot of professions create internships, so someone for 6 months can work in a daycare center, you know, and learn how to work with children and bring their Alexander skills into that setting, and so forth. We're in a hospital,
and we
want to create postgraduate training to prepare the Alexander teachers to meet the demands if we create these jobs, when we create these jobs. And around all of it, we're initiating research projects to build on any existing data we have.
Right.
So that's now, the strategic model.
So we're running a little short on time here. Maybe you could just say a word or two about some of the successes of the Parkinson's Project and tell our listeners what's the next project. Yeah.
Well, our greatest success was we just – our fiscal year is from July 1st through June 30th. And so we just finished our first year of existence. We were incorporated end of May of last year. And at the end of that year, we have received a $25,000 grant from the Parkinson's Foundation to deliver Alexander Technique classes for care partners of people with Parkinson's to meet the physical and emotional demands of caregiving. And to feedback into when they're with their care receivers, they'll have an understanding of Alexander principles, both to take care of themselves and also to help with the care receiver. So that was our a tremendous success. It's through the Moving Day community grants of the Parkinson's Foundation. The Moving Day events are walkathons around the country in various regions. And at each of those sites, then the monies that are gathered from that fundraising are funneled back into the community as community grants. So we applied for this in North Carolina. And the grant is to deliver these courses at six different somewhat underserved sites around the state. From that, with the research that we'll do, we will also then be able to apply for further funding to do this in other regions around the country. In the meantime, we're developing a project in Northern California with teachers there in collaboration with a movement disorder specialist, Dr. Maya Katz. She wants to refer her patients to teachers in Northern California for Alexander training. And so I'll be going out to do teacher training for them to be part of that project and to do hopefully longitudinal case studies in conjunction with it. Then we're applying for a grant in that region to deliver a class for people with Parkinson's and care partners together that's Alexander course. So we just keep building, and then these, as I said, these events happen around the country. We can keep applying for grants in each of those regions. and training teachers to work in these programs, and gradually people will be, these classes will be available to teach, to train teachers to teach. Whoever's interested in the classes could happen anywhere. We hope they'll be subsidized or free, but they can also be taught if people want to make donations. So it becomes an economic model that's flexible. People can do private pay, you know, love donations. It can be partially subsidized, fully subsidized, and it becomes a means of bringing Alexander to people who otherwise would not have access to it. So I'll just quickly run through the accomplishments for the Parkinson's Initiative. Our big focus last year was on being present at the Fourth World Parkinson's Congress in Portland, Oregon in September. We had an exhibition booth there on the convention floor where we delivered little mini lessons, and we presented six research poster sessions or small pilot study abstracts as part of their research presentations in the poster area. We led public workshops with Alexander Technique for people with Parkinson's in Portland area. We did teacher training workshops for Alexander teachers in that area. We ran a quarter page ad in the program, which is an online program, so that exists and people will see it, and the language was very specific towards medical professionals. We submitted some videos for their video competition. Those are on their website and will be there forever. And Robert Davis, who is a member of our team, he's a person living with Parkinson's who is in Toronto. His teacher was Caprice Boisvert there. He had made a small video that he, because he wanted to let his physicians know about Alexander Technique and how it had benefited him specifically with sleep disturbance. And that is now something that we use in all of our presentations to those populations. And finally, we participated in some state-of-the-art team care symposiums on the impact of cognition and rehabilitation at Oregon Health and Sciences University. And we made lots and lots of good contacts with research scientists, with individuals with Parkinson's, with advocacy organizations, and with medical and allied health professionals. Since then, I've been doing a lot of support group presentations, and I also did teacher trainings in London and delivered a plenary at the International Alexander Teachers Convention in Dublin that Rick Brennan organized, and so forth. So that's the idea with this first initiative, is that it will continue, and we'll continue building on this, and then we launch the next initiative. So this year's initiative is Alexander Technique for Pain Management. And that team is led by Dr. Molly Johnson, an Alexander teacher in Austin, Texas, with a science background. And she's working with teachers in Austin to develop some research projects there and some public trainings. And we're just beginning to design that initiative. And we're also going to locate, again, a conference where we can present. It's always good to have that recognition, because then there's publication. So what we're looking for now, what we could say is our calls to action, is we're really trying to find people in the public who've benefited from Alexander, who feel they'd like to be perhaps on some of our teams and advocate for Alexander into the public. The people who've said, wow, this is so wonderful. Why doesn't everyone know about it? And so when we put together a team, we have three types of people on that team. And the leadership positions we would really like to be people who are from the general public, from that population, and have benefited from Alexander. Thirdly, but are not Alexander teachers. Thirdly, people from within connecting professions who also have had Alexander experience but are not teachers. And thirdly, Alexander teachers with expertise with those populations or in those industries or with additional professional qualifications in those industries. With teams like that, we really can move forward. It doesn't have to be a large group of people. A few people can do a tremendous amount. And we're partnering with Dr. Rajal Cohen, who is an Alexander teacher. She is a professor at the University of Idaho, and she runs the Mind and Movement Laboratory there. And she is designing and the scientific consultant for all of our research projects. So if someone is either of those three populations I just mentioned that might want to be a team member, either a person who's benefited from Alexander or an industry professional with expertise in some of our future initiatives, and I'll read those to you, or an Alexander teacher with expertise in any of those initiatives, then please contact us. You can contact us. I'm sure you'll post
well,
this.
I'll put a link to the Poise Project website by the
end. The website's easy. It's just thepoiseproject.org.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so consider joining a team. Or if you're a teacher and you have clients from these populations, could you let them know about us and that we might be able to speak with them? They're going to be our best advocates. Mm-hmm. We've really underutilized our students as advocates for our profession. People listen to people who aren't trying to sell them something. The perception is an Alexander teacher is trying to sell you something, even underlying
right.
our discussions.
Right. Right.
But someone who's benefited, who's just enthusiastic, it's more likely someone will listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, do you know any funding sources that we could explore? Do you know of any philanthropists who might be interested either in a specific project or just in general with our mission? Or any granting sources or government or local sources within regions that we might be developing programming?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, would you, you know, we want to be sustainable. That's a very important aspect. We want to have full-time staff. I'm working full-time on this project, and we're bringing more and more people in. So if we have some staff, if we have some sustainability through income, then donors become very, very important. So if you like what we're doing and you think it's important, please consider making a one-time donation or becoming what we call the 10-year challenge annual donor, where you give a donation each year to help us know what we're going to have as our budget. And that's the main thing right now. This year is expanding and becoming sustainable. And we're trying to set up each of our 10-year initiatives teams now, because we were really, you know, working very hard to catch up with the Parkinson's Initiative, with the exhibit at the Congress and all of that. That took a lot of energy, but it was a great way of launching it. But we now need to really make our infrastructure sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
those are the main points I wanted to make. And I hope people are enthusiastic. I'm now going to perhaps end by reading the list of the different populations, our future initiatives. They're also on the website. And those are, this year, as I said, is going to be Alexander Technique for Pain Management.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, and by year I mean 2018 to 2019, that fiscal year, is AT for Addiction and for Trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year after that will be AT for Sports.
Mm-hmm.
The year after that will be AT for First Responders and Military.
Mm-hmm.
The year after that will be AT for what we would call in America blue-collar workers, more physical laborers or low-income often workers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then not that blue-collar workers are low-income workers, but that would be a overview of that of the workers that we will be in trying to develop programming for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year after that will be AT for office workers, for what you might call white-collar workers.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, AT for seniors, which will be an accumulation of many programs that we would already have been developing. And then the year after that will be AT for prisoners and AT for autism spectrum and sensory processing disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the last year will be AT across the curriculum of college and university departments, how we might say that it is so that it becomes an elective, maybe a freshman year elective in colleges, universities, community colleges. It could be in a biology department, what Aniko Ball is doing in Australia, where it's part of dental training programs. We'd like to see Alexander not just in performing arts programs, but in all departments.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, our 10-year, all every year, we're working on Alexander Technique for Children and Youth,
mm-hmm.
because I feel that is the most important initiative. If we can bring skills of self-care to and poise where children and youth can maintain that understanding, that relationship to their own innate poise, at the age, like I said, I had this when I was 19, we're doing a profound service. And so I've been working with the STAT UK, Society of Teachers of Alexander Technique, the UK Teachers Special Interest Group in Education, AT in Education, Sue Mary, Judith Kleinman, Esther Milly Theodous, that are developing teacher training for Alexander teachers to work in both primary and secondary schools as well as colleges and universities. And they're also designing curriculum to take into those levels, age groups. So that is my personal population, children and youth. That's the one that I'm most passionate about. So I feel that's perhaps a good place to end up if people are interested in joining and helping. There's so many ways. Simply making a donation, you don't know how helpful that will be. And then all the way up to, you know, helping with a research project.
And many of those, just to conclude, many of those initiatives, there are already studies and or Alexander teachers that are specializing in those areas.
And that's why we have those people as the third member of that team groupage. Yes, because pain management obviously was a logical second choice. That's that's where we're already.
Because we've already got the large-scale study in England and so on. And I'd like to just reiterate, because we really are running out of time, but I would like to...
I was trying to speak as quickly and articulately as possible.
But I'd like to just reiterate one thing that you said about students, because in my view, in general, Alexander students are the best people to spread the word in general. They can connect with other people in a way that we teachers may have some problems doing. And I've always said students and journalists, they're your two best propagators of the ideas of the technique. So, and it seems like you are very consciously wanting to tap into that as part of the project.
Very, very deliberately. It's part of the strategic model. And that's why I'm very excited by, for instance, Catherine Jacobson-Rahman, who's coming to speak at the Congress in Chicago next year. Her book Crooked, about the exploitation of people with low back pain by the back pain industry, as she calls it. She does not, in her book, she talks, has a whole chapter about, or a whole section about Alexander Technique, and I heard a lot of Alexander teachers being concerned or disappointed because it wasn't as accurate as they would like it to be. And I would have to say, well, of course not. You know, this, she is speaking, she was surveying a lot of different things. This is how the public looks at things. This is how journalists look at things. So she, to bring her to the Congress is a wonderful action, because she is going to become more nuanced and sophisticated. She's an intelligent woman and very articulate and very warm and engaging audiences. She's going to take away from that so much advocacy. And so it's not what she's bringing to us. It's what we will support her in bringing back to the public. She becomes an advocate. And we need to really look at, use that as a model whenever we have someone who shows the least bit of interest in what we're doing, instead of saying, no, that's not exactly right, we actually do this, and this, and being a bit, you know, like what I do with my daughter terribly all the time, of being a little too looking at what's not going right as opposed to what is going extremely well. We can really spread the word. Let other people talk about it.
Yeah,
well, why should they be perfect in how they talk about it? They're not Alexander teachers.
Exactly. Well, let's end the conversation on that note. My guest today has been Monica Gross, who's the is an Alexander Technique teacher, and more importantly, or as importantly, perhaps for this interview, the executive director of the POISE Project. And I'll put links to Monica's own site, the POISE Project site, and to a site where you could learn more about the Alexander Technique in general. And if you're a teacher or a student of the technique, or someone in
Yeah, like a
who sees.
forward-minding, someone who's like enthusiastic about new models that might help their clients or the people they work
Right.
with.
They're interested in maybe just investigating it at this point. I guess the best thing would be for them to get in touch with you through the Poise Project website, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, thank you so much for this. This has been a fascinating interview.
Thank you, Robert, and thanks for taking the time to do this. And I hope I left the impression that I'm feeling very positive and hopeful. And I
I
think in
think you
10 years, we're going to be in a
did.
very, I think there will be jobs in hospitals for Alexander teachers. They're going to be on staff, they're going to be in schools. I really feel very positive about this.
That's definitely how it should be. And I think you're probably right about that. Anyway, thank you so much, and we'll end the conversation here.